You're listening to Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, we'll learn about the science of the winter solstice.
Right now, it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's executive producer Erica Janik.
Dawn Sanford feels a deep connection to water, from sailing to ice boating. He tells us about the long history of ice boating on Madison's Lake Mendota and the pull he feels to the water's edge.
Ice boaters call Madison the ice boating capital of the universe. And that's only because we have a friendly rivalry with our friends down on in Williams Bay, and they call themselves the ice boating capital of North America. So members of the Four Lakes Ice Yacht Club, not to be outdone, we always take it up a notch. To have beautiful ice boating conditions relies on Mother Nature, and we have to have a big sheet of ice, maybe at the minimum 6-8 inches thick, and ideally without any snow, like this tabletop. I grew up on Cazenovia Lake. It's about 25, 30 miles southeast of Syracuse. And I had the great joy to have had my parents had a cottage on that lake, and that's where I was in the summertime from probably the time I was about 2 months old until I moved out here to Wisconsin. And so I always think about that lake. And what I've discovered, anybody who's grown up on any body of water, doesn't matter whether it's a river or lake, that's imprinted in you. That recollection of growing up on that water and the things you did when you were a kid on that water, you're stuck with it. You can't get away from it. And anytime you start talking about, you know, your youth, misspent or not, you begin thinking about things that happened to you while you were afloat. I rarely think about baseball games I played, but I always think about things we did on the water. People began building something, they had to do something in the wintertime, and people began modifying sailboats to go across the ice. And it was in the late 1890s when really the father of Madison ice boating, Charles Bernard, went to the Columbian Exposition in Chicago, and he saw a stern steering Class A ice boat that had been brought to the exposition from someplace on the Hudson River where they raced big ice boats. And he had an idea that he could improve that design, make it a little better, make it maybe a little safer, but certainly make it better. And he brought that idea back, and in his boat shop on East Gorham Street, he built what later became known as the Madison style. And these things were, for their time, this was cutting-edge technology. I've sailed on them. They're a little scary, maybe a lot scary. And Bernard had a fleet of these things. In the wintertime, you could go down there and pay a quarter and go ice boating. Just rent one of these things and go tear around on the ice. I think you had to bring your own buffalo skin robes. I've always been interested in history, and I've found Madison history to be particularly interesting. And knowing why certain things happened, it was really about the climate that drove this area into becoming a real popular ice boating spot. I don't know how many other lakes there are in this state, thousands. On any lake in any part of the state, there are stories like this.
Dawn Sanford is the author of On Fourth Lake, A Social History of Lake Mendota. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and Wisconsin Public Television in partnership with the Wisconsin Humanities Council. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. Find more Wisconsin Life on our website, wisconsinlife.org, and on Facebook. I'm Erica Janik.
Now, well, you wouldn't know it with all the snow on the ground, but technically today is the first day of winter, which also makes it the shortest day of the year. The good news is that each day after today will grow slightly longer, which means the nights will get progressively shorter.
Jim Lattice joins us now. He's the director of the UW-Madison Space Place, and he'll be teaching us a little bit about the science of the solstice. Jim, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks very much for having me.
So, shortest day of the year, what's happening between the Earth and the sun that makes this the shortest day of the year?
Well, so it's really the period of daylight that's shortest, right? So every day is 24 hours.
Sure.
but it's the division between the daylight and the nighttime, the darkness, is what varies. And so it's today that's the minimum period of daylight, the minimum time between sunrise and sunset. So what's going on is that in our hemisphere is tipped away from the sun as much as it can be tipped away today, which is has the result that the sun, when we look at it, is as low in the sky today as it can be. So so it actually was a moment when the sun was farthest south, which was early this morning at, like, I don't know, 4:44 in the morning or something like that. But the whole day then is the day on which that happens is the day of shortest daylight. So that's what we talk about.
Now, we think about this in a way as a celebratory thing because we're heading back toward the light.
Yeah, the
sun's
turning
around.
But it never
really feels like it. It's so incremental, it almost seems like you can't notice until something like March, if you ask me. I mean, how gradual is this?
Well, pretty gradual, just minutes a day. In fact, right around the solstice is when the change is smallest, because the term solstice really sort of means where the sun stands still. So it's in it's moving southward during the year up to this point, and then it pauses, so to speak. It doesn't really pause, but it's turning around to go back north, and so we're at the turnaround point, which is what it's called in some languages. And so we don't see very much change right around the solstice in terms of the period of daylight. And you see the maximum sort of change around the equinoxes. So when you say you don't notice it till March, that's
about right.
That's about right, yeah.
My assumption would be it's the shortest day. That means this would be the earliest sunset of the year. And my understanding I've learned today, I'm probably wrong about that.
Yeah, and that's one reason why the solstice doesn't quite match up, because the day of actual earliest sunset, which is probably what we notice more when we're coming home from work and it's darkest or something, if we do that on a regular basis, that was back on December 7th. And we won't actually have the latest sunrise until January 3rd. So that if we kept time by sundials, which is the way we ought to do it, then and in fact today would be the day of the latest sunrise and the earliest sunset. But we don't tell time by the sun anymore. We use clocks, which go at a uniform rate all year, unlike the sun. So because the sun gets ahead and behind of clock time during the course of the year, the sun is actually a little bit ahead of what we call the mean sun, which is the clock sun, back there in early December, and sets earlier. And then it takes a little while for that to even out, and it lags behind the clock sun, what we call the mean sun, by early January, and so we don't get our latest sunrise until then.
And you mentioned that this is the shortest day because we're tilted the farthest away from the sun. Is that something that's always a constant? We hear about these minute changes sometimes to the way the Earth moves. Are there any changes there? Is that always a constant? Basically, I'm wondering if there's ever any hope for it not being so dark in Wisconsin. Not
no,
in my lifetime, probably.
The inclination of the Earth, of the Earth's rotation. So we're really talking about the Earth's rotational axis and the angle that it makes with the Earth's orbital plane. And so that angle is pretty close to fixed. At least you can't expect any relief in the near term. That angle stays pretty steady from year to year, or even, you know, century to century. So the only variations would be really, really minor, almost undetectable sort of variations in that. So it is when our hemisphere is tipped away. You could, of course, winter in the south or something along that line, in which then your hemisphere is tipped towards the sun. So our winter solstice is the southern summer solstice, of course.
What if everybody in one hemisphere jumped at the same time? Have we ever tried
that? No, we've never tried that. We should try it.
We're talking to Jim Lattice from the UW-Madison Space Place about the science of the solstice. So I'm curious, maybe this is a dumb question, I don't know. So here's the plane. I'm holding one arm out. This is the Earth's orbit around the sun.
Mm-hmm.
And our rotation, I'm holding my arm at an angle now, doesn't quite match up with that. It's close, but not quite. Do we know why it's not lined up?
Well, it's not even too close. We're actually 23 and a half degrees tilted from what would be perfectly perpendicular if the axis were perpendicular. And there are plenty of planets whose rotational axis is closer to perpendicular, and the presumption is that that's how they formed. Mm-hmm. So there are plenty of planets, though, that are even more extreme than Earth. Well, a few planets that are more extreme than Earth. And we don't know why exactly, although one reason that's often suggested is that when the moon formed, our best science at the moment tells us that that was a collision with a rather large other planet that no longer exists. And the Earth-Moon system is kind of the remains of that collision. And so the characteristics of a major collision like that could have shifted, could easily have shifted the rotational axis of the Earth before the collision by a considerable angle, by certainly that much. So that's the current thinking on why our rotational axis is not closer to perpendicular to our orbital plane.
And should we know some cultures, so they're not around anymore, but some cultures have observed this as a kind of, you know, holy day or holiday.
Certainly.
What about you? Is this something that you think of as a special day as someone who studies space?
Well, it's certainly a nice natural sort of marker rather than something arbitrary that we find on the calendar. My father-in-law, every solstice, sends me solstice greetings, and I respond. So it is a nice turnaround point, and it used to be a fairly special point. You know, another name for it is midwinter day, and you mentioned earlier that it's the beginning of winter. So why is it also midwinter day? And earlier cultures, in particular the Celtic European cultures, thought of their seasons differently and thought of this as the depth of winter, which in a sense it really is, since it's the depth of the sun's path through the sky. So I think it is special in that way.
Jim, thanks so much for joining us.
It was my pleasure.
We were talking there with Jim Lattice, director of the UW-Madison Space Place. We've been learning about the winter solstice.
Coming up, holiday food traditions are about more than the food. They're about memory. We'll find out why. I'm Rob Farag.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network.